Hello and welcome to The Property Exchange, your guide to the latest news, views and opinions in residential property, with Winkworth, with you every step of the way in the property market. Your host is writer and commentator Anne Ashworth.
Welcome to this latest episode of the Property Exchange podcast. This time, what lies ahead for commercial and mixed-use property? In this episode, we're focusing on the outlook for commercial property. That's offices, shops, restaurants, and the logistics warehouses that are key to online shopping. Will rising interest rates cause havoc, or is a renaissance happening in the high streets and the commercial districts of London and other cities? Is the future the mixed-use development, part shops, offices and homes? And what could the new government, under the new Prime Minister, do to aid the commercial property sector? To get some answers to these questions, I'm joined as usual by Dominic Agay, CEO of Winkworth, and also by Adam Stackhouse, Head of Developments and Commercial Investments. Now, first to Dominic. A new analysis by Winkworth Commercial suggests that demand for certain types of commercial property is going to stay strong. That's despite rising interest rates. Can you tell us why this is?
Sure. I mean, I think from an overall point of view, overall perspective, commercial property is a physical asset with, in some cases, inflationary-linked rents. It's a popular proposition in a time of rising inflation, and so it has that appeal. Beyond that, and looking at the individual parts and different property types in commercial property, there's been a significant change. And so demand has sort of moved from one product to another, leading to growth of popularity of certain types of commercial property. Sort of big drives of these have been, you know, the desire to work from home. Recently, I saw a survey saying that 40% of workers now work from home at least once a week. And then there's been the kind of need for more health and safety in commercial properties, to have different environments, better ventilation, and a rapid increase in online sales. Again, the magic 40% number. 40% of high street sales were done online during the pandemic. So those are big factors which are pushing demand for users of commercial property into different types of commercial property than was previously the case. So what does that sort of mean? It means really that working from home means that there are people with flexibility and time in their local high streets. That means they've got time for local shopping, and so there's more demand for the local communities and local retailers. It also means that that those people that are coming to the office, employers I should say, are looking to attract employees back into the office, and so offices need to be slightly different environments. They need to be more prime. So a greater appeal, and in many cases part of a larger scheme. So it's not just an office space. So it's an office space with a gym, a cafe, landscaping, etc. All these things to ensure that they can bring their employees back and allow for collaboration face-to-face by having employees back in the office. So, and finally, I think the third thing is obviously because of increasing online sales, the sort of logistics, the last mile logistics is a big factor. So, you know, there is a race to have spaces where these big lorries that cross the country can park their stuff and then obviously can be locally distributed from online sales. And so that's an area of huge demand and there isn't enough supply at the moment. So, again, a very popular asset class. And in some cases, these can be inflation-linked rents on these properties. So I think there's plenty within commercial property, plenty of products that are growing rapidly. And the reasons behind them are fairly macro and been created from the last few years.
We're in an era of rising interest rates. Isn't that one of the headwinds that could slow this revival?
Yes, certainly. I mean, I think, you know, there are obviously in the last quarter, I think we saw the number of deals in central London reduced by sort of 8% on Q2 2021. So there has been some of the momentum come off. And certainly, you know, there is caution at the moment due to, inflation the Ukrainian war, rising cost of increased cost of finance, and personal circumstances. People are more on a personal level, the consumer is more concerned about their situation. So that sort of does cause headwinds for the commercial property market. But I would say, as I hopefully sort of explained, you know, there are parts within that that are parts of property that is part of a long-term change. And I think any investment in property is considered long-term. And clearly, we hope that the headwinds, Ukrainian war, will come to peace, and inflation will pass, and you know, you'll be in there in great assets for long-term.
You've talked about the changes that have been made by the pandemic. Do you see those as being permanent?
I do, actually. It was changing. Things were changing anyway. And what we saw was acceleration of that change by the pandemic, and actually into some areas that we didn't expect. So there was a long-term trend to, more flexible working. And there was a long-term trend to online sales. Obviously, those kind of increased rapidly as everyone was locked down. There are some trends, though, that have appeared that I don't think was anticipated, so such as the revival of the local high street. So, you know, what we found is, you know, that the more time, as I said earlier, is the more time people can spend in the local areas, the more flexibility they have, the more vibrant those local high streets become. So I think I can't see that reverting. I think we're in a world now where there will be hybrid working going forward. Certainly at the moment it's a tight labour market. It's in, you know, employers need to appeal to employees, and so employees want to work part time from home, part time in the office, and so that will dictate commercial property needs. And again, online sales isn't going away. So, you know, logistical hubs etc. will retain their popularity going forward.
Now, over to you, Adam. You head up Winkworth's commercial division. Can you give us an overview of the demand for the different types of property? Let's start with high street shops. Are there tenants for those empty units that we see on our high streets?
Well, yes, Anne, there certainly are. And just to recap and reaffirm what Dominic said, the commercial property market is very keen to move forwards from the lessons learned from COVID. And there's no doubt in our minds that we see a market that has evolved. The changes were overdue in many cases. And we're managing to merge these important step changes in behaviours with pent-up demand that's come through from COVID, an increase in overseas investment as these airports start to overfill with passengers, and a market that, though inflationary, gives us an opportunity to exercise higher yields on our clients' assets. So without a doubt, we're excited. A changing government adds fuel to the energy. There's a new enthusiasm, we think, coming into the autumn to get on with it. And this is sort of filtrating down quite nicely to the various sectors that you highlight. Looking at the high street in particular, it's certainly the case that footfall across the high street has remained stable throughout the first two quarters of 2022, and we're very confident this is going to continue. We don't think that online penetration levels are going to significantly harm the high street going into the second half of the year. There's no doubt that rising costs to retailers are forcing them to review their growth plans. But these are agile businesses that we're talking to and working for. And many of these occupiers have already undertaken portfolio restructuring during the pandemic. And I think the vacancy rates at the moment will probably slightly decline from where they are today. So no surprises and good times to come.
What kind of new tenants are you seeing emerging for empty high street units?
Well, I think it's worth noting that food and drink remains certainly one of the most popular sectors for the high street. People are still of a mind to tap into immediacy. They've been a little bit spoilt in terms of that kind of dial-up and get-it model that they enjoyed through COVID. So there's still an appetite to go down to the high street and make use of those immediate facilities. Good examples would be across many London boroughs where parking bays were initially temporarily suspended. This now looks like a permanent arrangement whereby some roads are closed and people are encouraged to dine outdoors, a much more cosmopolitan and a good way of bringing the community together. So I would say modestly priced restaurants, food and drink, boutique operations are also becoming attractive again as people are moving away from too much online shopping for fashion. Now that the fashion retailers have started to charge for returns, people are starting to go back into stores again. And of course, as we've highlighted in previous podcasts, medical services continue to take up a lot of slack in the market as they provide services to people in local areas.
Why don't we turn next to logistics warehouses, the sheds that serve online shopping? What's happening in that sector?
I think that market kind of ran away with itself a little bit during COVID. That market's become increasingly sensitive and is almost operating at a best-in-class level. Certainly key occupiers such as Amazon have made steps to purchase industrial parks so that they can control the right type of setup for their businesses. I think that we know now, or we certainly anticipate, the Bank of England will continue to raise interest rates to combat inflation. And this may put increased pressure on this particular sector. So I think that we'll find that healthcare, leisure and logistics generally will continue to see increased demand from investors, but it is certainly flattening out to a best-in-class model.
And a best-in-class warehouse, can you tell us how large that is and where it's located?
We're certainly looking north of 100,000 square feet. It needs to be near to key transport networks. We anticipate, we've certainly been talking to some of our clients where they're looking at moving their trucks around more during the later hours of the day and overnight. And there's obviously new technologies coming into transport sectors that are going to make it easier for these vehicles to move around on a more cost-effective basis. So they're really looking for 2 to 3 hours connection routes into a large city centre.
I'd also like to get an idea of the mood in the office market. Is the return to the office fueling demand and rents?
I think we need to be mindful and we need to be careful how we phrase things, because there is no direct evidence of pressure, but we are detecting pressure both at the government level and from our clients as employers who are putting pressure on their workforce to return to work. So there's very little doubt that this is the undercurrent and the pattern that is starting to emerge. In terms of these large office buildings that people were predicting would be sort of barren and empty and have no future purpose during the depths of the COVID pandemic, we actually think these buildings will emerge into a hybrid type model where you'll see what was traditionally an office building adopt perhaps three types of use, with reduced office space, increased retail and potentially some residential homes included. So multi-use buildings, we call them mixed use, but that normally means two purposes. Multi-use buildings really are the only way that developers can make their projects financially viable. More specifically, I think we do need to acknowledge inflation again. We've got rising interest rates, and it has meant that office investment activity has started to slow down. We've had a very good start to the year on that front, and it's way ahead of levels in 2021. So I don't anticipate big issues in the office sector as people return to work. But we're working with our clients on a number of hybrid models where they adopt different use classes for each of these addresses.
So within one of these multi-use buildings, we're in an office. Now, what does that office need to offer to attract a high-paying tenant? What facilities must the landlord provide?
It's almost like a wish list, Anne, and I shan't introduce my own personal taste at this stage, but there's a lot of things that are being spoken about at the moment. I mean, we've used this phrase, best in class, and to encourage people back to work, they need to have a sense of place when they come into the office. So they need to have a well-being factor, a sort of well-being score, which is something that we're trying to apply to some of the office spaces that we're putting out to the market when we're talking to clients. And that well-being would be focusing on breakout areas where people can completely switch off from the work environment. So traditionally, we've seen some of the more modern businesses over in East London adopt all sorts of quirky things. Initially, it was a pool table or table tennis. A couple of them I know had caravans in their lobbies. You could climb inside and attempt to hide away, but they didn't really work. And I think there's a real acknowledgement out there that we need to accept that people have been used to working from home. A lot of people are very comfortable working from home. So within these office environments, we need to give them a space that feels just a little bit like home. And immediate things such as areas to relax, excellent air conditioning, the correct lighting, optic fibre broadband, these are all key requirements for these spaces going forwards.
And does the landlord need to provide a great kitchen with breakfast maybe?
Yeah, and actually it doesn't just stop there. The space that they create often needs to have a little bit of character as well. It needs to be quirky, it needs to be exciting. We worked on a building recently where we discovered some history. It was used as a printing office for Great Western Railway, so the client decided to make the breakout areas into individual railway carriages just so that people could completely switch off. They've popped TVs in there, comfortable seating. These carriages accommodate 4 to 6 people. It's all within the office environment and they can relax and completely switch off.
I think we'd all like to pay a visit to that office. Now, from what you and Dominic have been saying, commercial property is an asset that currently provides a level of inflation proofing for investors. Can you give me more of a sense of how attractive that is?
Yes, I think that we know that yields are rising, and that is probably the foundation as a safety net in an inflationary market. There are certainly opportunities for investors, both institutional and individually. Looking at individual investments at the moment, we are finding that people are starting to reject buy-to-let residential model purchases. And really, that's partly down to the taxation structure in this country, which potentially may be adjusted going forwards. The reality is that income on residential properties is taxed very heavily. When you start looking at mixed or multi-use buildings, individuals can take away lump sums, park them in a property SIP. And the key attributes of a property SIP are your entry costs are lower because you'll be paying a reduced rate of stamp duty. They're very tax efficient during your time of ownership. It's a lower level of capital gains tax when you look to sell the property on. But most importantly, and people do have an eye on that end game element, there are inheritance tax benefits as well. So I think investors are moving more towards a mixed use model because of the flexibility and the tax advantages.
Now, back to Dominic, the new Prime Minister. What can they do to give a boost to commercial property, aiding regeneration and levelling up, which has got to be key to the policy of this new government?
The main problem for me is business rates. It seems odd to me that we have a situation where, it's incentivised not to have a high street presence in our communities, because you don't have the same tax issues or costs. So for me, I think the priority would be to kind of address that. We want to encourage local communities, small shop owners, small businesses. They create local communities, pleasant environments, general mental health happiness, all of these things. And so we should be supporting them, really. And I think to have them on in sort of expensive business rates deters people from setting up on local high streets, which I think is a shame.
Adam, give us your take on this.
In terms of the general mood, I think that I'm excited. The whole business is excited and our clients are excited about the enthusiasm that a change in Prime Minister will bring. So we're excited about potentially a relatively fresh start in September. In terms of the taxation model that exists at the moment, I think there is an interest from the candidates to put a little bit more money into the individual's pockets. And I think that easing VAT on fuel duty and equally perhaps winding back the national insurance increase will put a little bit more money in the hands of the consumer and will serve to stabilise the market as we look to rebuild.
And should there be any incentives to landlords who are converting buildings into multi-use to provide more homes and so meet housing targets?
It's a very good question, Anne. And one of the things that we deal with a lot and very rarely have a positive outcome on is the VAT rating for buildings that are under construction. And it seems inordinately complicated to work with HMRC to secure the magic 5% VAT rating. And if they could just simplify that process and maybe lift it away from listed or heritage buildings only and apply it more to a regeneration stroke benefit to the community type assessment model, then reduced VAT levels may harm the government in the short term, but it would certainly speed up the creation of these hybrid buildings and bring renewed energy to city centres.
So, new government, we've got some policy initiatives that you could be working on. Dominic and Adam, thanks very much for joining us for this episode of The Property Exchange. As ever, it's been great to chat and share ideas. Do subscribe and join us for next month's podcast, where we'll be looking at the enduring appeal of London's prime villages. If you want to know more, then be sure to subscribe.
This has been the Property Exchange podcast. For more information, go to winkworth.co.uk or find us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. The producer was Tom Maddox. For more episodes, make sure to subscribe to your favourite podcast provider.